Yes, ladies and gents. You know what that sound means. Time for another final round. It's Friday night. February 27, 2009. And tonight in the hot seat, we have Chris White of Nowhere to Run. He's our host here on Revere. And aside from having him on the hot seat, there is a few things that I want to take care of tonight, and something that I've been working on for a couple weeks now, quite a few weeks. Actually, I'd say probably more like a month now, and it really hasn't accumulated any progress. And that is to get a debate between Chris White and Michael Tsarian. And I've emailed Michael Tsarian, and I have not gotten any responses. I had his phone number posted. I was, you know, really close to calling him today, but I thought, nah, I'll just email one more time. And I told him we're doing the show tonight. Maybe he's listening, and if he is, and he does, and, you know, he's not cowering out or anything, he can feel free to call in and discuss some of the differences that Chris and him have. But either way, I'm trying to get it set up. But tonight I have Chris White on, because Chris White is totally game on debating Michael Tsarian, and has already accepted the challenge. And before I bring him on the air, let me just play a little clip so you can understand some of the differences. If you don't know who Michael Tsarian is, I'm not going to go into a whole thing explaining it, but you're welcome to do a Google search and find out. But he roughly is, he believes in astrotheology, and he teaches on astrotheology. A lot of his claim to fame is regarding the year 2012. Chris has, much of which, you know, it goes along with a whole group of people who are basically trying to say that Christianity is a form of astrotheology and a perversion of it at that. So let me go ahead and play a clip from a video that was put out by Chris and debunking astrotheology, so you can get an idea of kind of where he's coming from, and then we'll bring him right on the air.
One of the primary claims of astrotheology is that on December 24th, the three stars in Orion's belt align with the star Sirius, and that on December 25th, they all point to the rising sun. Astrotheology claims that the Christmas story is in fact allegory for this astronomical event. They say that the three stars in Orion's belt are the three wise men, and that they're following Sirius, the star in the east, to the birth of the sun on December 25th. There are several problems with this theory, but the main one, I feel, is that this astronomical event happens nothing like the way that they are presenting here. You can verify this with a simple astronomy program. I'll provide a link in the description section of this video to some free software that you can download and find out for yourself. This image is what it would have looked like 2,000 years ago on Christmas Day in Egypt. You'll first notice that there is no sign of Orion or of Sirius pointing to the sunrise as they have depicted so many times. If we take away the sunlight, you can see to the right of your screen Sirius. Orion is already on the other side of the horizon before the sun rises. This scenario happens much more like they say in different months, like almost any day in October. You can see that as the sun is just about to cross the horizon, you see the stars in Orion's belt and Sirius pointing directly to it. The same thing with almost any day in November. It looks much more like the three stars and Sirius are pointing to the rising sun. In fact, it's by December 25th that Orion is completely below the horizon before the sun rises. And to make matters worse for astrotheology, due to precession, which occurs on roughly a 1.25 degree per 100-year timescale, it would mean that 2,000 years ago, Orion would have set about 2 hours earlier, even further before the sunrise. Some proponents of astrotheology.
Okay, we'll just go ahead and call it quits there. So he has this great video debunking astrotheology, science. It's literally, he takes the science of it and he breaks it down. He shows that a lot of the claims that they have are just not possible. So without further ado, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, man, and I'm glad to be here on the hot seat. I'm also glad to be on here in Friday Night Fights. I don't think I've ever been on Revere on Friday night, so this will be my virginal voyage here on Friday Night Fights.
Right on. Awesome. So I've been trying, and I've been communicating this to you, that I've been trying to get Michael Tsarian to debate you. I don't think that it's probably going to happen. And I've tried to approach several people to debate on various issues. I even sent an email to Jordan Maxwell, got no response. I mean, literally, the ones who don't want to debate don't say, "I don't want to debate." They just don't respond. So I started a coward list. And it's not something to offend people. It's just it's kind of a gimmick in a way, but it's also to say, hey, you know, we want you on a show to debate. And a debate is a challenge. There's nobody else doing stuff like this today. To face your accusers. And you've obviously, I wouldn't say you're an accuser, but you've definitely done a fair share of debunking, I would, you know, say. And, you know, I'm going to have to add him to the, I guess, that coward list if he doesn't accept the challenge. But, you know, I really appreciate
sure
your willingness
Maxwell
to debate.
Doesn't like, I'm sure both of those guys really don't like me. Even if they did get the email, I'm sure that that would be pretty much a no-go on both of those guys.
Yeah.
But,
well, let's just say for the record right now, before we get into some stuff with you, that you are being challenged to a debate, Michael Tesarion, and I would really appreciate, and I think most people would appreciate, if you would take the challenge. And what does it mean? It means that you're going to come head-to-head with Chris White to discuss issues involving your differences in belief. And, you know, if you feel confident about what you believe in, I don't see how it should be a problem. Let that be said. I think that you've done an excellent job, just on my own, from my own opinion. You've done an excellent job going through the various astrotheology myths that they've been perpetuating and debunking them fairly thoroughly. So, you know.
Well, thanks. I was just actually reading through Tesarion's book on astrotheology, and I was really taken back by a lot of the oversights. I mean, I can see why he's so protective of putting that stuff out there on torrents, because I mean, a lot of, well, I mean, actually, to get to his credit, I mean, he does a better job. It seems like he knows where the big weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, give credit where credit's due. He is very, very, shrewdly planned this out. But the fact is that a lot of the astrotheology, for example, seems to come, from what I can tell, almost directly from at the base of it, we're going to probably put like Albert Pike kind of thing, but a lot of it is in theosophy. I was just Googling some terms and spellings and things that, like in his book, Astrotheology, Sidereal Mythology, I think, or whatever it's called. So much of it went directly back, as had recourse directly to either theosophy or Albert Pike, but obviously this almost solely comes, I mean, at least modern day, how we see it, how Jordan Maxwell packaged it, and how Tesarion keeps on saying, you know, it's because of Jordan Maxwell's wonderful, you know, work or whatever. Well, it tends to come from Manly P. Hall. And I really do think that, for whatever reason, when Bill Cooper did the first episode of the Mystery of Babylon series, the so-called Lost episode or whatever, but even the one that you can download, like on One Heart Books or whatever, that mm-hmm. version of Mystery Babylon series, the first thing that he's reading there to introduce everybody to the concept of what Freemasonry believes and what they are trying to get us to believe, mm-hmm. he's reading from what 6 years later became Jordan Maxwell's book, That Old Time Religion, with Paul Tice.
Mm.
But clearly it didn't say at that time Jordan Maxwell wrote this book. I mean, you can listen but see, Cooper consistently read Manly P. Hall stuff and the same way that he was reading that. Clearly he was introducing everybody, as I showed in the William Cooper debunks Jordan Maxwell thing, tried mm-hmm. to debunk every possible aspect of that whole thing. But now I'm throwing around that word debunk or whatever. But anyway, my point is that I think there's so many things in this that it's begging people. And I know how it feels to read this and be like, wow, this is really, you know, because he does a really good job of making sure, you know, that nobody's going to follow the line here. But it's just, it's so simply debunked, a lot of it. Like, for instance, you know, like he'll say the word disciple
mm-hmm.
means, well, it's disc. You know, there's a disc in disciple, and therefore it's talking about the zodiac or whatever. But, I mean, again, that can only work in the English language.
The
Greek word is like mathetitis or whatever, which has no connotation to disc whatsoever. And again, it's something Freemasonry believes, like as a matter of belief. Like if you asked them if they really believed that Horus was crucified, they would say yes, absolutely. They're not, it's something at least on lower levels that they're actually saying, oh, well, we don't believe it, we're just kind of pushing it on the masses. They actually believe it, but, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know how much to go into it. I'm sure you've got something else to say, but,
no worries.
But anyway, about astrotheology and stuff like that, there is so much of that that absolutely depends on it being said in a slick way. And it feels like when you're hearing it, like, this is right. Why would I try to, this is new, this is amazing, this is real. But it's all in the details of this stuff. It's so slick. Like the whole idea of December 25th,
right.
Like an astrotheology thing. That's the crux of the whole thing. There's no reason to even do the scientific debunking, because December 25th has literally, this is my, what I keep saying to people, is like, if the Bible's trying to be some kind of astro-theological, try to mapping out, you know, this whole thing, and that's mm-hmm. what all it was doing, mm-hmm. how come December 25th isn't in there? If it's so important, how come it had to be added 400 years later?
Right, exactly.
You know, it seems like that would have been the thing that they made it sure that there was in there, you know. And then when I'm reading this book and he's making such a huge deal about December 25th is, you know, the Christians got duped, you know, and it was, and everybody knows that Christianity is based on this, you know, ancient solar worship because of December 25th, when there's literally, and I mean this absolutely seriously to anybody who's listening, there's literally no connection to December 25th and Jesus, period, until the sun worshippers, or, you know, whatever, I'm saying that kind of roughly, but, you know, the Catholic Church 400 years later, which, you know, was worshiping kind of this ancient mystery school religion, or at least they incorporated a lot of the Roman practices into religion, mm-hmm. as that's what the intent was, mm-hmm. 400 years later. Anyway, I'll shut up and let you try to guide the whole process.
No, it's all right. No, that was great. I mean, that's basically where you're coming from, and I guess that's the real issue. I mean, I, you know, people oftentimes, and I've seen people, there's some people who are pretty frustrated with you saying the things that you're saying about him because they think that what he's saying is good, right? But a lot of their issue with you is the fact that you are debunking him and they feel like you're doing an unfair attack. Well, that's not exactly correct. I mean, he started out with making falsified claims about Christians and Christian belief. And you are a Christian, yeah. So I could imagine that you took that a little, you know, personally and as a challenge.
I'd say to that, everybody, this is extremely important. I know sometimes it's easy to think, well, we're just, you know, this is kind of the conspiracy culture, this is kind of what we do for entertainment. No, this is ridiculously important. And if indeed I'm right, that it's unbelievably important that you recognize some of the errors and stuff, especially in regards to the stuff that, I don't think he would ever let anybody, if anybody's listening, they're on Michael Pissarian's board, go try to post SitchinIsWrong.com on that board. I've been asking people to do that forever. I've tried to do it. I can't get it through there. You can go through and just completely debunk everything about Zachariah Sitchin. It appears the guy doesn't even know the basics of not just Sumerian, but even Hebrew. It's amazing how badly he is. I mean, it's like he doesn't even, he's completely unaware that Sumerian has no relative pronouns, and like with the whole Shumu thing and the etymology, it's almost as bad as like. Anyway, my point is that if like Sitchin is that wrong, I guess SitchinIsWrong.com illustrates.
Right.
That is Cesarian's whole bag. Is that, you know, genetic, you know, aliens came down here in prehistoric times, genetically engineered people, and that's why we have this kind of this schizophrenia, because we're hybrids, we're half natural men that love the earth, and we're half evil aliens who all worship technology. So this is his explanation for the problem with evil, which is interesting in itself. But my point is, if you can, and he doesn't claim to cite anybody but Zachariah Sitchin and Eric von Daniken. Eric von Daniken admits fabricating evidence because he said if he didn't fabricate evidence, nobody would believe it. We have huge problems with von Daniken and Sitchin to the point of it doesn't look like it's possible to come to the conclusions that they did without literally knowingly deceiving people.
Right.
I can demonstrate a very good reason why the ruling elites would want us to believe that aliens genetically modified us. I can show you why that would be a good thing for them to do if they were in fact planning on a world government that won't look like a totalitarian police state, but more like a utopia at first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complicated, but part of this whole culture, this conspiracy culture that's now being put into the regular world through, like, you know, right now the avenues of kind of the pseudo intellectual stuff like NPR PBS,
right.
You know, they're starting to put the theosophy stuff to the minds of the semi-educated, and they're passing it down to their people. It's like, you know, I think that, you know, didn't you hear, or everybody knows that Horus and, was crucified and had 12 disciples and all this stuff. I mean, people are saying this now. It's like, when did this happen? It's the externalization of the hierarchy. It's happening, and, I'll stop.
Yeah, you know, I would say, and I like to add to that, you know, just from my own research, New Age, all that New Age stuff, and this is New Age. And I think Sarion, and I think, you know, Maxwell, I think, all these guys, I'm thinking New Age, okay? Are the external interpretation of Masonic teaching. No. So, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I cannot believe how amazingly obvious it is that Maxwell and Sarion are both almost verbatim have recourse to Madame Helena Blavatsky. And it is, if you've ever read Blavatsky, it has this air of like, this is true. Mm-hmm. And that's what it makes it so intoxicating, because it reads like, why would I even want to look this stuff up? It reads so well, so convincing, and just a quick glance, you're intoxicated by it. Mm-hmm. And she, what she essentially did was write a new version of history with the air of like, here I'm proving it. Here's a quote from Tacitus, and here is, you know, all this stuff that you weren't supposed to know, and all this stuff like that. But the same thing about like her and let's say Albert Pike and Manly P. Hall, all of them have that air of superiority in the sense that this, it's like Hitler said, people would rather believe a big lie than a small one.
Right.
And if somebody told a big lie about you, it would spread faster because it's almost like, why would somebody lie about that? That's a crazy thing to make up. And that, it's kind of how this all stuck, in part. Mm-hmm. And the other part is because psychologically people wanted to believe it, because ultimately if she's right and if Desarnes is right and if Maxwell's right, then it gives them psychologically a freedom to do anything that they will. Aleister Crowley, do as thou wilt, the whole of law. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of got that aspect too. But the problem with her, and the problem with Albert Pike, and the problem with those guys, is that you can pick them apart and say, mm-hmm. this is complete BS. Mm-hmm. And you can show, now granted, history is written by the victors, and it's really difficult to find out what is true and what isn't true, but it can be done depending on what it is. I mean, if people say that the ancient Egyptian records say such and such, if Blavatsky is quoting Gerald Massey, and Gerald Massey is saying that I found this thing that says thus, uh-huh. and if we and all modern Egyptology and everybody that's ever looked besides him mm-hmm. tried to find it and couldn't find it, then you can be reasonably certain that Gerald Massey, a chief druid, had motivations to say what he did, which all of these people have one central thing in mind. It may look like they're just trying to save us from the control of religion, but honestly, it's Christianity. It's Jesus. It's that. Mm-hmm. It's completely focused Judeo-Christianity.
Okay.
Is the focus of everything.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Flag.
And let me just add this to you, that one of the reasons, I think one of the biggest criticisms I hear toward you is the fact that you always boil it down to your faith, which is totally fine. I'm not disrespecting that in any way. But I wonder, could you get into a debate about this topic with Sarion and keep your faith out of it? Are you capable of doing that? Because I know you have a faith in Jesus, but there's a lot of people who don't.
Yeah.
Outside of a belief in Jesus, is there justification for the debate? I mean, could you like get into a debate with him and still prove that there's stuff wrong with what he's saying?
Well, here's the deal. Most of what, like, this is how it all works. If they generally use a lot of true things about the real things that are actually happening, and it is really weird. When he talks about stuff like, you know, some things can actually are true, even discussing the spiritual world and stuff like that.
Right.
But the lies are always focused around Christianity and Judaism. It's the Bible is always where the lies come.
I think there's a large focus on that, but, because it's part of their trying to apostatize people into their faith. But I mean, honestly, there's a lot of stuff in there that has absolutely nothing to do with Christianity. It's just them trying to justify their own belief.
Well, Tassari's weakness in that regard is probably his essentially taking on literally every conspiracy theorist that's anti-Christian without seemingly any. I mean, I'm being a little what's the word? Probably it's not. Anyway, what I'm saying is that there are a lot of conspiracy research that are just put under his umbrella. Oh, yes, that's true. I've read that. Now that's true too.
Right.
Which aren't. Like, let's say Sitchin and Von Daniken or Lawrence Gardner. He has these wholesale endorsements of people like Lawrence Gardner in regard to Jesus being an alien. He has, in Lawrence Gardner and Zachariah Sitchin, for example, both, Lawrence Gardner explicitly has to be knowingly deceiving people because of the manipulation of Hebrew for the purpose of getting people to believe what he's doing. Now, to me, and what he's doing is trying to do something, he's trying to make Jesus an alien, okay? Let's say Sir Lawrence Gardner, that's what he does, okay? So, or part of it, anyway. So, anyway, why would somebody go to such, take such a risk to completely, absolutely edit out and completely change the, in his presentations, knowingly had to manipulate the text in order to get people to believe that? That's a red flag. That's like, why the hell would you do that? There must be something special about that. And so therefore, it's too easy not to pick apart. Do I want to, and honestly, do I, you know, if and then the same thing, like if Sarian says, there's no such thing, there was no person as Solomon or David or whatever, that was all made up in the 4th century.
Right.
I mean, that's too easy. Well, what are you supposed to do with that? I mean, like, I don't know.
Right, I mean, yeah, I hear you. And, you know, I've got to say that, you know, some of his arguments about Christianity, some are valid. Not all of them are, but some of them are, you know. There is some historical, you know, inaccuracy. Well, I wouldn't say inaccuracies, but just hard to prove information about the Bible. You could sit there and say that, and there's no way you could prove that it's not true just as much as you couldn't prove that it is. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
there's just no evidence.
One at a time, but I'll say this. Generally speaking, I agree. This is the whole straw man argument that I'm at a loss to explain the collective doublethink that is going on in the truth movement, that we somehow have not put, we've missed 400 years collectively of history, or let's call it 300 years, where we honestly think most, your average truther honestly believes because of they've been getting a pound in their head over and over and over without getting a chance to get up for air, that there was no history before the Catholic Church took over Christianity. That Christianity started the day that Constantine saw an idol in the sky.
Right.
So, if that's true, and there wasn't 300 years before, now, we just can't say 300 years is longer than America's been a country. There was Rome killing Christians for something, presumably, and it probably wasn't astrotheology. So 300 years after Rome tried to completely eliminate a religion, they said, guess what, we're going to be Christianity, and we're going to change everything. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make it look a lot more like Roman religion, and we're going to have worship Mary, and we're going to worship saints, and we're going to worship crosses, and we're going to do all this stuff completely. We're going to have December 25th because we like that day. And Easter, Ishtar, we worship Ishtar. So everything changed. So all these criticisms of people are knocking down straw men. Oh, you didn't know that Easter was worshiping Ishtar? So what? Mm-hmm. I mean, my point is that, you know, it's straw men for the most part.
Right.
In regards to just general apologetics, you know, that's the kind of stuff, you know, people send all the time. So, I mean, if there's something about the Bible or whatever, I'd like to just take it on individually. Generally speaking,
absolutely. Okay. Well, you know, basically, at this point, I just want to take calls. Let's do that. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0, 1-877-738-3730. You're welcome to call in if you have a question, if you want to debate about a topic, if you want to rebut anything that he said so far. I definitely agree with you for the most part. I definitely, you know, I like to look at things not so much with my own personal opinion. I think I've already talked to you about this before, but I don't like to just take a position. I believe stuff, but what I believe I feel like is irrelevant. Really, what I'm about is seeking the truth. There's things that I believe in that I can't prove. For example, 9/11 was an inside job. I believe that, can't prove it. You know what I'm saying? But I'm trying to get enough information where I feel like I can. And, you know, and with that, when I try to approach an argument situation, I try to make sure I stay far away from beliefs that, you know, when it comes down to a person's, like, religious beliefs, you know, whether it be you or him, I take the position that I'm not trying to attack his belief. But if what he's teaching is basically an attack on other beliefs. I mean, that's how I look at it. I look at it like he is basically challenging the existence of Christianity and trying to say that it's something other than what it is. And I can see a natural response from you to want to go, okay, and focus on that. You know, but on another level, I also noticed that, you know, I believe that what he's teaching may be in support of the New World Order agenda. And so that's the stuff I focus on more or less. Now, when we get into a debate, and this is what I'm concerned about, I want to get you into a debate, and I'm going to hassle the guy until he does it. I mean, really, he probably won't do it, but I'm going to give it my best shot, because as far as I'm concerned, everybody in this movement needs to start debating. Everyone's been kind of doing their own thing for so long, it's getting nowhere, and it's just splintering the groups off, and I think, you know, there's a lot to learn in a debate format. But I'm wondering if every single time, you know, you get into a debate with him, are you going to be boiling it down to, well, I believe in Jesus, well, I believe in Jesus, well, I believe in Jesus, well, I believe in Jesus. You know, and it's like, okay, I know you believe in Jesus, but how does that affect what he believes? You know what I'm saying? Because I know that you can go through and say, okay, all this stuff you're saying about Jesus is not true, and I can prove that. Okay, that's valid. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. But can you, you know, but in a debate situation, are you going to, can you prove that what he's teaching about his own beliefs are not true? Or is it just a defense for your belief?
Well, I mean, I mean, it depends on what the claim is. I mean, this whole thing really it could come across as like me defending a belief. And honestly, you know,
I gotta be honest with you. That's what people think. But regardless of whether or not it comes off that way, that's what people are saying. So,
you have a series of claims out there about Jesus. Let's say Zeitgeist Part 1, for example. If you're going to refute that, I mean, just going to have to talk a lot about Jesus. I mean, that's the only way to refute Zeitgeist Part 1. If people make claims, you have to address those claims. He's made a lot of claims. I'd say a huge portion of his claims in particular, Maxwell's claims in particular, rest on a dude that lived 2,000 years ago.
Right.
So what am I supposed to do? And plus, I am going to defend him, but not because of, I mean, why I'm doing it might have that motivation, but as far as the things themselves, the things that we're addressing, this is the way I look at it. It's like, you know, I don't know. I think that probably answered it.
Yeah, I understand. You know, and I guess that's what I'm just making sure, because, you know, if it boils down to this is just what I believe, then it's not really going to be a good debate in that sense. It's not going to get anywhere.
Thing,
you know?
It's the big elephant in the room of why do they keep lying about this? A guy like that can just keep on the general conspiracies of the day, if not for having to continually go back to, you know, let's debunk Christianity again. Didn't we already get done? Didn't we do that last week, Mikey? No, we're doing that again this week.
Right.
I mean, what's the deal with that?
Okay, and I understand what you're saying, but let me throw another perspective. And I mean, this is a debate show, so obviously my point is to challenge you to the extent that I can. Okay,
sure.
But you know, you're looking at the most prominent religion in the world. Of course, if religion in general, and they're not just picking on Christianity, they bring up all religions. They claim they all come from the same place, but they focus in most of their, you know, energy on one, the one that happens to be, especially here in America and most Western countries, the most prominent religion. Wouldn't you say that would be the most, that should be the most, their biggest focus if what they're saying is true?
I know that their mantra, I've heard them say a million times, oh, we're not just picking on Christianity, we're much broader about that. But really, I mean, what they do shows that they have a pretty singular agenda about it. I mean, as far as one particular religion, you might be right that maybe they want to pick on it because it's big or whatever, but the thing is, it's really not that big. I mean, the whole, as we mentioned before, it's a straw man thing to knock down, you know, pagan Christianity.
Right.
I mean, I'll spend an hour knocking it down too. You know, we could co-host a show if we want to do that. You know, if you would just admit that that's a completely separate version from original Christianity, the kind of Christianity that was there 300 years before, and the kind of Christianity that emerged after people were finally allowed to read the Bible again.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
People forget for 1,600 years, nobody let anybody read this so-called, you know, mind control book. Mm-hmm. And there's just this huge gap of history where a political organization, namely Rome, got to tell everybody what the book said, but nobody got to actually read it. And the masses were in Latin, and a language nobody understood. And people want to tell me that it's a mind control mechanism? No, keeping it from the people was a mind control mechanism.
Right. Okay, I hear you. Let me ask you, did you ever get your letter written?
You know, I got started on it, but I didn't get it done, no.
Okay, just wondering, because I was going to go ahead and hit you up about doing that now. So, let me ask you, you know, do you want to debate Tessarion?
I want people to recognize where he's wrong.
Okay.
And I mean, do I want to debate him? I want to hear the answers to some questions that I don't think that he's got answers for. But do I think that he could probably talk circles around me if he really wanted to? Sure. But I'm not saying that I'm smarter than him or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that there are huge holes in his entire thing. Like, we could go to, I mean, there's so many things, not just the Sitchin and stuff, which I think is crucial, and the 2012 stuff is absolutely crucial to this whole, what they're about to pull on us, unsuspectingly, truthers included. Mm-hmm. But not just that, but everything, the Akhenaten stuff, there are scholarly retorts to this that just completely make it to be utter nonsense. Mm-hmm. But he's a slick person, and because of that slickness, it's bought hook, line, and sinker, and it's sold with truths that are indeed true, and truths that people aren't getting anywhere else. It's just, if people could start to see this, if they could understand it with him, they could understand it with other people.
Right.
I think Jordan Maxwell is a good person to debunk, if you will, but because so much of his stuff was, as Bill Cooper pointed out, this is exactly what they're trying to do. Bill Cooper was extremely serious about warning people about the kind of thing that Jordan Maxwell was telling the world.
Right.
That's why he started Mystery Babylon series reading a book that I guarantee you did not have Jordan Maxwell's name on it 6 years before he wrote it. I don't know who did. I wish somebody would find it out, but it wasn't Jordan Maxwell's name. I guarantee it. And he used that book to demonstrate what they're trying to get us to believe, and word for word is what now 90% of the truth movement woke up to and is fighting to protect this paradigm in their mind that they believe to be true, and they think that I am trying to divide us all because I'm trying to show us that it's not true. I'm just trying to get them to recognize that it sounds good, you want it to be good, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Right. Let me ask you a question. Do you think he's lying?
So I think he's lying. Well, I'll tell you this. I get this a lot, you know, as far as do I think that they are part of it or whatever. In Tassarian's case, I honestly think that the guy really was raised up from early childhood to be probably, you know, everybody around him told him he was like some, you know, the indigo child and blah, blah, blah. Just his basic biography is that he was raised from a very early age to be trained to do this. Not unlike Jiddu Krishnamurti, I think.
Right.
So he probably, I mean, if Mother Dearest continually is teaching you tarot cards, you are probably, you know, I mean, you probably believe it to be true. If you're reading Blavatsky when other kids are reading, you know, Little Red Riding Hood or whatever, then yeah, he probably believes it. He might be a true believer, but right. I almost guarantee that I think that he probably is Rosicrucian or whatever, and I don't know to what degree they actually, you know, like somebody like Manly P. Hall, did he really believe that or not? I mean, I think it's really hard to tell. I think I give people like that a pass for the most part. There's very few people that I actually think are in on it. And the only reason I do is because I can't figure any other way that they could have knowingly done it. Like Sitchin, like Lawrence Gardner, and possibly Alan Watt, I'll throw into that group. But
right.
I think that those people actually know what they're doing and are intentionally doing it. But I would say that it's very possible that Maxwell and Tassarian are true believers, yet mm-hmm. deceived. I know in Maxwell's case, he speaks a lot about spiritual things, you know, really, like, scary things that have happened to him that scared him kind of straight. He definitely was experiencing a lot of sleep paralysis and a lot of what I would call, I think that he was deceived. And I don't know if any of them are actually knowingly. And we have this concept of working for the Illuminati or agents for the Illuminati or whatever. I think that that's naive in thinking that it's all coming from, like, down one pike, you know. Like, I think that they can be connected without actually being connected. I mean, because it's more complicated than that.
So I guess the next question I have then, whether or not he believes, maybe he's lying, I don't know. But do you think that you would consider him an infiltrator, meaning that he knows that the direction of this movement was against most of what he was teaching? Do you think that he knows that what he's teaching is part of the agenda of the New World Order? And do you think that he's kind of infiltrating in part of that movement?
I would say it depends. I think that it's possible, and I think that either way you look at it, there's a theosophy huge theosophy connection there. I know that this is what theosophy is written about. This is what they wanted to happen. They wanted to train these people for a long time. You can read, Alice Bailey, I know Sarian would say, oh, that's just a corruption of the true pure form of theosophy, which was Blavatsky. But even Blavatsky said that the true purpose of theosophy was to prepare the world for the coming world teacher.
Right.
And I don't think the Sarians did, but I think that, that either way, people were probably getting him to do what he did, even if he doesn't know it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He was either groomed for it by people who did know, or he knows. But I do think that if he is a Rosicrucian or a member of any other secret society, it's very possible to get the higher degrees to do what, like as Bill Cooper said, to achieve the higher ranks, the 33rd degree. You know, you have to do a great work for the group or whatever.
Right. I wonder, you know, he's never confessed membership of any of these groups then. Has he ever been confronted about it?
Well, I don't know. All I remember, I think that, the whole Rosicrucian thing, I remember, Rasta Gnostic had said when he was a Rosicrucian or looked into being a Rosicrucian or something like that, and I think that it was him, I heard on a show in Revere that said he, you know, I think he interviewed Michael Sarian way back when, and Michael Sarian told them, him who's a Rosicrucian.
Oh.
And so I kind of kept that in the back of my mind. I didn't really think a whole lot of it. But then when I saw this thread post done by this guy, that essentially the whole Rosicrucian movie was just me reading of it back a year or two ago, then it all made sense. And I remembered him telling Rasta from Rasta saying that. And so do I think that he is? I think that the signs are there. He definitely clearly has a lot of Masonic knowledge. He has the way that, like, just reading this book from Master Theology stuff. Mm-hmm. The way that he references material, the way he came about it. If you kind of backtrack it, back engineer it, he's getting it from Masonic literature directly. Now that doesn't mean that he could just be trying to expose it to save the world or whatever. But it's just the way that he references it
right. And
is interesting, and it seems like I don't know the answer to the question.
Right. You know, it's interesting because the thing that trips me out about it is that he tries, it seems to me that they're trying them, and I'm referring to like, you know, Maxwell, Tessarion, even Ike for that matter, are trying to do this whole like dark magic, light magic thing. Like they're the dark magic, we're the light magic, you know? And it's like, we're the good and they're the bad, you know? And it's that whole dualistic principle at work that they're trying to maintain. Like it's some kind of battle, and that the light is going to win, and they're trying to the dark magic wants to keep the sacred knowledge from you, and all this nonsense, you know.
Well, that's a good observation, because I was just thinking about that. Like it's the constantly say the occult history of the world, the occult history of America, the occult this, and nobody ever knew the occult this and that. And that's fine, you know, occult means hidden, blah blah blah. But it's interesting that like they'll show all the, you know, that they're magicians and show all these things, yet. Clearly, they are every single, like I was reading Manly P. Hall just before we went on, and that guy, I forget what it was, which book it was, something about rituals and black magic, and he was talking about black magic and how awesome it is and to learn it and everything. And it's like, in regards to Sarian and Maxwell, Sarian runs a mystery school or whatever, you know, he constantly is talking about, you know, the different ways of learning deeper rituals. If you go on his forum, you know, that's all that they're talking about, that,
right.
You know. They're really into it. So my question is, you know, I don't understand if even the people that are that deep into it could be able to tell you if you ask them, well, what's the real difference about, you know, white magic, dark magic? They probably say something like, well, it's your intent, you know, if you're wanting to do love or what, you know, love things and, you know, blah, 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 try to help things. Okay, well, that's fine. But sometimes, you know, we'll do dark magic too. Ultimately, the answer, the question I have to all magicians is know the source of your power. Because it seems like everybody has a conflicting view about the sources of power. Even the greatest gurus, you know, don't match up with the guru right next to them about the source of the power. It seems to be limited, and it seems to be subject to other forces that seem to be greater than them, that trump them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to sit down with somebody that's experienced. A magician, and just have a philosophical chat with a Satanist and the like. And I find Satanists to be the oddly very open than most people to a lot of things, honestly, because they've seen a lot of real things. They've seen a lot of evil. They know what it feels like, what evil, presence of evil feels like, and they are open more than anybody else. They're seekers, generally speaking, anyway, but they also know the nature of the power truly. And I would say that most people that are that deep into it are bound to it, generally speaking, by fear. And I think that's what we see a lot with the people in power, too. Okay. Rant off.
All right, cool. We're going to go ahead and go to a break here, and we'll be back in just a second.
News, politics, rumors, rants, and debates. It's the worldwide home of free speech radio. RevereRadioNetwork.com. Total free speech, even when it's ugly.
All right. We're back. And I have Chris White on the phone. We're discussing several things. His faith, some of the debunking that he's been doing, specifically of an individual named Michael Tesorian, who I am attempting to try to get into a debate, which I'm hoping that he will accept. And it would be nice because we can get to the bottom of a lot of different things. I mean, there's a lot of claims being made. We really need to have some more conflict. And not I mean, I'm sure that Chris would agree, but we're not talking about negative conflict. We're not going to call him an idiot. We're not going to yell at him. We're not going to do anything to slander him. He, like, just like Chris said, we have questions. I'm going to stay totally anonymous. I mean, my goal is not to take sides on this and this. It's just to moderate. And I'm going to be as fair as I can. And but I want to see more conversations happening between people of different beliefs. Because I really believe that if you are in fact a truth seeker means you're seeking truth, you're going to be open-minded, and you're going to let the evidence stand. The evidence. Is there evidence or is there not? Is the evidence false or is it true? And also, I know that without a doubt, if we continue to splinter off into different beliefs and all do battle with one another and never get to the bottom of things, we're never going to accomplish anything. To defeat, if that is their intent, to defeat the New World Order agenda. So I think it's pretty significant if we want to do battle with this system that is occurring, that there's going to have to be some sort of unity. We can agree to disagree on a lot of things, but there's going to have to be some commonalities that we share, and that's really the intent of this show, is to try to find the commonalities between us all, and not everyone can be right. Some people are wrong, and it's up to you to get to the bottom of it. So if you think that Chris is wrong, it's up to you to call him right now and debate him, to bring up your evidence, to stand your ground and share your information. And that number is 1-877-REVERE-0, 1-877-738-3730. Feel free to call, and I'll take your call. Chris, you there?
Yeah, man. I would add to what you were saying there about getting involved in fighting the system and everything. I found a great way to do that, is your local system is somebody that, you can be there, you can go to the office, you can talk to your mayor, generally speaking. I mean, you can actually have an effect. It's really easy to create networks. There's probably emails on your local, city probably has emails for every school teacher in the whole city or every, government official in the whole city. Just collect emails of everybody in your whole city and whatever issue that you're concerned about that affects you, vaccines, fluoride, whatever. Get it to everybody. Put together a website, your city versus whatever thing, and then just get after it.
Indeed. Absolutely. And I think that let's get into some commonalities here. There are some commonalities, at least from what I understand, maybe I'm wrong, between you and Jordan Maxwell. I mean, Jordan Maxwell, for example, he talks about not giving up your guns, surrendering to the New World Order, and all these different things. I mean, for somebody, I'm not saying that you're accusing him of being an infiltrator, but, if he was, obviously that would be the wrong thing to say. So, I mean, regardless of the fact that you have differences in opinion regarding belief, there are some commonalities there. Would you agree?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I agree with a lot of the stuff they talk about. I mean, the way I see it is nobody can get anything done if they didn't actually offer something, of value. And it's dangerous in a way. Like, if you take somebody straight from American Idol to Alex Jones, they are a clean slate. If they just got everything kind of wiped off, nothing I've been told is true, then you can rebuild them. You can reprogram them essentially with just basically you know, well, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, which I of course agree totally on. But then, you know, they're so wide open to other facts, and that's why it's always. But anyway, my point is, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with it. But at the same time, I think that knowing the agenda is really the thing to be able to discern whether or not this is something that they don't want us to know or not. For example, if we are not supposed to know that 9/11 was an inside job, or that there is a world socialist government being set up right now in the aftermath of an engineered financial crisis.
Right.
If these are things that we're not supposed to know, that's fine. But I would say all we have to do is look at history. Hitler. Hitler was a major conspiracy theorist. In Mein Kampf, all you have to do is read that. He basically was saying the Jews ran the universities and they were the problem. They were the reason that Germany was in financial collapse, and that they ran all the banks and ran it all underground because blah, 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 blah. At the same time, he didn't mention, but it was widely circulated underground, was the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. So people like you and me at that time in that day would have been looking at the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion saying, this is absolutely crazy. Have you read that? I mean, like, we would have been starting networks distributing that spurious document. And what I'm saying is that it had a use for them at that point. But what I'm saying is that the new Reich has a potential. I'm not saying I'm right, but if I am, then we need to watch out. Because the new World Order could come on the heels of the defeat of what you and me ostensibly are fighting right now. Me, you, Tsari, and Maxwell are all fighting this tyrannical global government with the neocons and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
What if they get defeated? What if they get defeated, and what if aliens show up on the scene and they tell everybody, this has been your problem, we're here to save you guys. These guys, these evil people that are tied to these old religions that you don't need anymore, what if they start a utopia that really was the plan all along?
Right.
What if the destroying of all the religions under the deception of an alien invasions that are telling us everything that we want? What if we started the New World Order that's depicted in the Denver airport when we're all handing in our weapons and happy about our New World religion and everything else? What if that's the plan? Then it doesn't really matter if they tell us about 9/11 was an inside job, because it's all going to get defeated ostensibly by some, you know, savior anyway. So all this whole thing is a patsy system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why every single thing is game. That's why there is no conspiracy sacred by the very same people that are engineering the conspiracies.
Right.
It's always the same thing. That's why, you know, Freemasonry, the externalization of the hierarchy, they are essentially indoctrinating you and me, the last people on Earth, you and me and the truthers, that are indoctrinating the last people that can give them any hell, because they're the last people that can actually, discern things, think about things, or concerned about the issues. We're all being indoctrinated into the Freemasonic school of thought. And
right.
We think we're just laughing it up, like it's truth, nobody wants us to know this, we found it all out by ourselves. But
right.
Really, we were fed it, you know, on a silver spoon.
What if Christianity's false? Are you willing to accept that if there was evidence to prove it?
I think as much as stuff as I get thrown at me every day trying to prove just that point,
mm-hmm.
and still have found every single one to be a weak argument that's based on, I mean, throw me what you got right now. I'll just give you an example of how weak the arguments are.
The fact that there's no verifiable evidence that Jesus ever existed.
Well, there is verifiable Roman evidence by the best Romans in history. We've got
scholars,
Tacitus, Suetonius. We've got the 12 Caesars written about, you know, the
here's the argument for that, because I have heard that argument before. But the argument that rebuts that is the fact is that they spoke about many other world religions as being a fact too. I mean, that they talk about, you know, in the same way they talked about Jesus, they talked about Apollonius and a lot of others. Does that mean that they're true and that they existed and they did the things that they did, or do you believe that they never existed?
I think that you may not be listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying that there is a huge, there is more evidence for the existence of Jesus than there is for almost any historical character in history. The idea that there isn't is a total fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
There is Jewish, Greek, Roman, it's amazing how much evidence there is, and it's
okay.
Weird because it kind of backfired on so many different.
But you're saying this as like a blanket statement. There's all this evidence, and let's get into the evidence individually. But first,
okay.
Let me break it down with the one question. Has any of these people written about Jesus ever physically seen him?
Well, they came real close, but I mean, at the same time, if you're going to say that you have to, it'd be a requirement for history, if you're just going to make a new rule for history, if anybody wants to write a historical, like a paid-for Roman historian, have to actually see Jesus with his own eyes in order for anything to be valid, then all the history of the world, all the textbooks are going to have to go.
Right.
You know, if I wanted to write a history right now in the Vietnam War, would could I not actually, you know, do some research and figure it out because I didn't actually see
but,
it in my own
but
eyes?
No, but then another aspect, a lot of history, I mean, I can understand Vietnam War is not a good example. You should have used something that is prior to most written history because, you know, we have people who've actually been there who have written their account. So there's firsthand accounts. The only firsthand accounts we can get are those in the Bible, and nobody ever spoke to any person that have wrote the Bible.
It's not a bad example because Tacitus was closer than the Vietnam War. So was Suetonius. You have Josephus. He was basically there at the same time. Sallust, basically there at 52 A.D. I mean, 63 A.D. is Pliny the Younger. I mean, you've got Sallust at 178 A.D. But I'm talking about, you know, Lucian of Samosata.
None of them were there at the same time. Who was there at the same time as Jesus that wrote about him?
Well, I mean,
you're talking about 100 years later.
You might be thinking that there's just like nothing but historians running around ancient Israel, but this is a guy who, pretty low-key guy for 3 years, and the guy that you would expect to see something write him. I mean, there wasn't exactly a ton of historians at that time. In fact, you do have at that time people totally confirming the whole circumstance, that Tacitus said Christus, the founder of the Christian name, was put to death by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea in the reign of Tiberius.
Right.
But we've got people completely validating so much of the thing. But anyway,
but this is anyways, I know what you're saying, but I've read a lot of his stuff from things that had nothing to do with anything to do with Christianity, and he didn't write. In terms of what he believed was true, he wrote based upon what others believed is true. Now, Christianity was a rising organization. It was spreading all across the world at a rapid pace. Obviously, he wouldn't ignore it, and of course he would write about what is believed about Christianity. Do you think he believed that Jesus was he would say that there's, you know, he would look at Jesus as more as a cult leader, not actually the Son of God, or somebody who
miracles. I mean, that's what he wrote. I mean, the rest of that statement said, but the pernicious superstition repressed for a time broke out again, not only through Judea, but where the mischief originated, but through the city of Rome also. Well, you know, these people were no big fans of Jesus, and in a lot of ways, that's the evidence against them. Like, take the Talmud, for instance. The Talmud goes to great lengths to debunk the miracles of Jesus. It says they were just it actually contradicts itself on several occasions. On one hand, it's like, it was parlor tricks, and then another one says he was a magician, he was practicing sorcery, so, you know, don't pay attention. And another one said, oh, it was just the kind of thing, he was standing, you know, it was kind of like just a magic trick. The fact that they spent time in the Talmud, which was, you know, about 70 A.D., when you had probably people a lot, if it was true, you had hundreds and thousands of people whose lives had been affected by Jesus well alive at 70 A.D. You know, Paul died at 63 A.D., or somewhere, I guess 66, I think, like that, he was executed. And nobody really denies that either. But what my point is that why would they, at that time, when there's no reason to just, why wouldn't they just say, he didn't exist, shut up, why are you guys even asking us about it? But in the Talmud, they had to say, no, his miracles weren't, they were just parlor tricks, they were just sorcery, don't pay attention. That in itself, like Celis does the same thing. None of these people were fans of Jesus.
Right, so I understand that.
It's not like that's their argument.
Okay. I hear you. But, you know, for somebody to look at it, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it's easier because you're coming from the perspective of somebody who already believes in it. Taking yourself, using that same example and applying it to somebody like Apollonius or something, or, you know, any one of the other so-called, you know, saviors that they've tried to perpetuate, you would have pretty much the same position. Like, okay, yeah, so they talked about it. Yeah, they said it was a miracle, but what else? You know, that doesn't prove anything. To you, it does.
Well,
You got to understand that's a pretty weak argument in the sense of getting somebody to believe in it.
No, it's not. Because you see, the incredible double standard that's being dealt here. I could go on forever on this list. I only hit like maybe a quarter of the names here. We could keep going over and over and over different things. I'm specifically not using anybody that could possibly be biased. Okay. And I'm just trying to give the complete non-biblical, only unbiased people, because you have to tiptoe around people when you're trying to prove the absolute obvious fact that if this was anybody else in the history of the world, it would be a clearly known fact that the guy existed. No actual atheist worth his salt will step into a debate right now and deny the existence of Jesus because they can get laughed at and they don't like getting laughed at.
I got a perfect debate for you. It just occurred to me. I don't know why I never thought of it before, and I don't know if Tsarion's going to come through, but I'm going to continue to pressure him, and it's probably going to take a while. But I think if you're down next Friday, I'd like to get you in a debate with atheist guy or the infidel guy. He's a guy who has one of the longest running. He's considered an internet pioneer, and he started a radio show. What he calls a free thinking radio. You know who he is, then, right? Would you be down to debate him?
Sure, but I could probably find somebody better to debate the historicity of Jesus with him. A bigger fireworks show, but yeah, I'd do it.
Okay, well, who do you have in mind?
For the historicity of Jesus, probably I don't know if she'd do it. She's a genius in this regard, but she doesn't. I'd think of somebody. I can think of people smarter than me.
Yeah, you know, well, if you dish out whoever you got. You know what I'm saying? I don't think Infidel Guy is considered one of the highest, you know, up there either. He's just another radio show host himself with his own opinion, but it would be interesting to hear it. You know, I gotta be honest with you, I'm a Christian. I'm just debating for the sake of doing it, and I honestly don't believe that, you know, I believe that Jesus existed, so.
Yeah, I know. You're kind of
I'm not gonna be,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that it is strange, like, because of the huge body of evidence, and it's one of my favorite subjects, really. But honestly, it's interesting to look at the actual historicity of it. Is that it was never really the existence of Jesus is one of the easiest things to prove, because nobody really challenged it until very, very recently.
Right.
And the reason of that's a very simple one, and that's because it wasn't really that possible for, let's say, the Jews 70 and 70 AD to challenge it, because that would be crazy if he really did exist, which is, you know, the kind of things that we see all throughout that time. So many people were affected by that ministry of his. I mean, he was healing people of, you know, ostensibly and stuff, like grandmas were saying, look, I don't care what anybody says, this dude healed my eyes, you know?
Right.
Anyway,
right.
So.
I had a call come in and I missed it. I'm going to call him back right now and see if I can get a hold of him.
All right. Hello.
Hey, this is Carl from the Final Round Radio Show. Did you call in?
Yeah, we live?
Yeah, you're live. Sorry about that. I missed your call. I didn't see it come in.
Oh, no worries. Is Chris still on?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Yeah, I just got a couple questions, because, you know, I can see where the religious following can kind of lead you astray. Do you think that Palestine, like, you know, where Israel is, should be an Israeli state? And, you know, explain why.
Do I think it should be an Israeli state? Well, I'm really intrigued by some of the work that shows that it was kind of deserted. Like Mark Twain, when he wrote about Palestine back then, he described it as just a complete wasteland, like on the moon or something like that. There's some really interesting history to happen, and I know this is kind of a long way to answer your question. I'll try to make it really quick. But it was like I think it was the British who owned the land at the time, back when Mark Twain was visiting and so on. And they gave it to the Jewish people. But right as World War II started to kick off in the early days, when people started to see Nazi Germany being built around them, they were starting to migrate. They were all going to migrate to Israel. But at that point, for whatever reason, I think that Britain has a lot of answering to do for this move, but they stopped allowing Jewish people to enter the land of Israel. And that essentially sentenced a lot of Jewish people to death by Hitler.
So you know what the scholars and stuff, you know, say, it was people living there that lived there before any, you know, the British invaded colonized that land.
Let me answer this
land.
Next question. I was just going to say, and then what happened at that point was during that time in Nazi Germany, Britain took, it said this mandate was that anybody that was living there for 2 years was granted refugee status. So there all of a sudden it became a huge amount of refugees. When people started, when they disallowed the Jewish people to come back to Israel, everybody, all the Arab countries, everybody else flocked in for 2 years, and they only had to be there for 2 years till they were declared refugee status. At that point, when they wanted to come in after that, after the Holocaust and after everything else, people were saying, they were being displaced by refugees, and the formation of the United Nations and all that stuff really got involved in that whole thing of, like, crying a foul. What are you doing knocking all these refugees out? Do I think that I have no opinion, honestly, of the government or what the government should be doing there. I don't really care, honestly. I don't think that it's a religious obligation by any means. That's a psyop that's been put on us for the purpose of knocking it down. Again, I think it's a straw man that people put on, and I think, the, I don't know, it's also all a big mess with that issue. There's so much disinformation surrounding it. Just got to tiptoe lightly around it, I guess.
So do you think, like, Michael Tesharian is, like, possessed or something? You kind of alluded to that earlier. Or, you know, even Jordan Maxwell, you know, when he talks about the spirituality and the, you know, different aspects. But how do you get the information about the cult without going to different resources? You can backtrack. A lot of this stuff is accurate from what I've seen. I'm talking, like, the symbols.
Well, yeah.
I think
absolutely right about that. I don't know how, I think it's, in a sense, you know, it's, that's what we're, you know, we should do, is we should find out what they believe in order not to, but the problem is if you were going to research Masonic thought, and then you ended up taking that Masonic thought, and instead of exposing it, you packaged it in such a way to sell it,
The only thing I see, these guys are kind of like small potatoes compared to, like, years and years of generations of watching MTV and all the subliminal stuff that just now being exposed, you know, by different people. I mean, it's just amazing.
No, it's the same agenda. I see it. I mean, how many shows on the Disney Channel right now are teaching kids about the occult? I mean, and how to, you know, how great it is to learn to do magic and things like that. Not really any different than what Tesharian's doing. I mean, I'm not saying it's all that.
He's not really
that
advocating people. I don't think he's really advocating ritualistic magic. I think he's referring more to just the, you know, everyday magic of just doing something well that you, you know.
But
you
what's
understand.
The question is the guy saying that all this assimilism that he's teaching is truth, or is he just saying that that's what they believe? I mean, I get it as him. I mean, I'm just looking at it from my perspective. From my perspective, it sounds like he's saying that it's truth. That this is the truth. This is the real history.
They're using those symbols, and those are powerful symbols. He's not saying that's truth, though.
So, the Masonic
people believe, if you asked Manly P. Hall if Horus died on a cross and rose 3 days afterwards and was called the, you know, light of the world and all this stuff, Manly P. Hall would tell you, yes, Horus really did that. But see, every Egyptologist in the world would say, what the hell are you talking about? That never happened. Horus wasn't crucified. He didn't rise in 3 days. Nobody called him the Savior. He wasn't the light of the world. Nobody would agree with that because it doesn't exist in real history. But the Masonic version of history is fact.
What about the Old Testament being the, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off. But the Old Testament being like the Taurus cycle, and then the New Testament, or no, I'm sorry, it'd be like, off my hand topic. Not Pisces. Pisces is like the New Testament, and then the Old Testament would be like Aries.
Sure. Yeah. Well, like I was just reading in his book today just to kind of make sure I knew where exactly what version of that he was saying. And it's interesting, if you take all the stuff that he has to connect the New Testament to Pisces, you could take that alone and show how silly this is. He takes, they generally have about these four things. One, well, Maxwell calls Jesus the Fisher King, which is not true. Jesus wasn't a fisherman. It never claims that he was a fisherman. But Tesharian is a little better.
He took the fish and feed a whole bunch of people. That is one of his
Yeah, he took
Bible.
That's a good example. He says, Tesharian says, well, isn't it very obvious that this is an astrological symbol? He says, Jesus feeds the multitudes with two fish and five loaves. He says, two fish, as we all see there, is,
the
Pisces.
And the Pope wears the fish hat.
But look, check this out. But what he fails to mention is that just a few weeks later, Jesus feeds the multitudes with multiple fish and seven loaves. And he says the seven loaves are the house of something. So he selectively just chooses any time that he can find that it fits. The same thing, and the other, there's like another four things that make no sense. They always throw in the Pope hat to there to prove that Jesus was somehow...
And Joseph with the different colors, you know. But the thing that does make sense is Moses... And the when he freed the slaves, they had gold, and they erected the wrong they erected a calf instead of the new symbol, which would be like the lamb or the ram.
But that doesn't make sense because the way that they get people to believe that is the word ram. If your name was Abram, that word Abram in Hebrew, if they called you I don't know how to speak Jewish or Hebrew, but if he said Abraham and that was your name in Jewish and that's what it sounded like, that word ram would not translate to English word ram, speaking of a male sheep or whatever. It can't be true. The word ram, if you were a Hebrew and you wanted to say, talk about a male sheep, you would say Ariel, I think it is. And so it literally can only work some 3,000 years later in modern English. It's the only connection they have to the age of Aries, to the Old Testament, and it's a very, very weak one. It's deception. It's all it is. It intends on being done very slickly, very quickly, and hoping nobody will notice.
I don't know, man. I think everybody's got their own perspective. Like, I don't think any of it's true. I find my own truth, and you're doing the same thing, and Carl's doing the same thing, and you guys have a good night, good show, and take it easy.
All right, thanks a lot.
Take it easy, man. Thanks a lot.
So, yeah, I mean, it's all interesting stuff. Let me go ahead and go to a break, and we'll bring you back one more time, and we'll kind of wrap things up, if you will, and talk about a few more things before we get started. I mean, before we try to hook up this debate. Be right back.
All right, man.
Now, we'll do to the human race.
All right, we're back on the air. That was a little clip somebody put together on YouTube with Michael Tsarion speaking over a beat. Now you got a little, for those who are not familiar, this is a little bit about Michael Tsarion, who we're kind of talking about tonight. We also have a caller on the air. Caller, go ahead.
Carl, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How you doing, bro?
Not too bad. It's Rich. I've called him a couple times.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't want to really interject in you guys' conversation. I'll let you get back to it in a minute. I really don't know who Tsarion is, and you know, I've been following this conversation a little bit. I just kind of jumped in this probably about 20 minutes ago, so I haven't got the full context here. I appreciate what you guys are exactly going on about. But it seems to be interesting. But one of the things that just happened to overhear a little bit ago, and what's your guest name again? I forget.
His name's Chris White.
Chris, okay. So I just happened to overhear Chris mention something about the obviousness of the current financial situation that both our country and the world faces, and how it was designed or engineered or planned, or I don't know, however you want to describe it. And I just found that, I've heard people mention that, but I just find that personally fairly peculiar and highly unlikely. But I didn't know if really Chris wanted to speak to that, like how he feels or you or anyone else feels like justified in coming to that conclusion, basically. That's all.
Chris, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay.
Wow, that was a lot of echo.
Did you want to take it, Carl, or?
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay, well, I would say the system itself, the what has happened with the, if you read the Constitution about the weights and measures, and Congress is only supposed to make those laws, you know, dealing with, basically not to make paper. I mean, the amount of the dollar never changed from at the times that Congress was issuing money and things like that. Anyway, my point is, I guess that the system is essentially designed to fail. If you read about, like, Alexander Hamilton at the Constitutional Congress, he was trying to get the central bank at that time because of the ability for control of it. Because I think that it could be just a matter of power. It could be just a matter of philosophy. But I think that the details over history, I think, demonstrate a willful intent to control the economy through fiat currency and for the purpose of essentially global socialism. And I think that when we see it enacted in such a way as we are now, this kind of behind the scenes Bretton Woods kind of economics, as they're calling it, on an international stage, it seems to me almost transparent when you have, what's his name, Gordon Brown, saying this. I mean, and this is also, I guess, coming partially, and I'd say a good majority of the way that I guess, so nonchalantly say that it's a planned financial crisis, because I've been hearing that for over a decade of people, you know, defectors from, you know, this idea would come out and say this is what they're planning on doing. They're planning on implementing a crash for the purpose of control. They call it order out of chaos. Watch out. That's how they plan on actually moving the socialism in. It's through a planned financial crash. So I've been hearing that for so long, been saying it for so long. So I could be just a victim of circumstance in that regard, but I would say the pieces fit together in that regard. Everything seems to be going according to plan in that way. I'm sure that I'm missing a lot of stuff as far as details there. But
if I could just interject real quickly, Chris, can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah, Chris.
Okay, I'm sorry. So, just one thing. I mean, I don't know if Chris sounds like you're probably not a big proponent of necessarily the personal philosophy of like someone like Naomi Klein, but I'm sure you're probably aware of her book, The Shock Doctrine. You know?
No.
Well, okay. I mean, it's a fairly famous book. You probably do a Google search on it or whatnot. But I mean, basically, it's similar in line with what you're saying. I mean, she's pretty far out there. She's definitely like I won't say she's a communist or anything like that. She might consider herself one, but she's fairly left leaning, really progressive. But her book is just renowned in all corners of the world. I mean, she was personally here on the on campus where I currently attend school at the University of Iowa just last week. I've had her book for a little over a year and a half now. It's a slow read and fairly dry at times, but nevertheless, her basic premise with this book is that, throughout time in the westernized world, whenever there's some type of a situation, whether it's engineered or not, and she definitely does say that there has been engineered one, specifically in Argentina with the Falkland Islands and in Britain. You can get in more detail, but long and short of it is that the people swoop in and they set up. This is more in tune with trying to design, or if it's not designed, at least anticipate some type of financial chaos, and then they jump in and install the type of government that they want in the economic system that they want, which actually has more to do with Milton Friedman than anyone else. I mean, she definitely does say that there are things along those lines. She was asked whether or not this specific one was designed and said, highly unlikely. Very, very small chance. You know, and I mean, I'm not a big proponent of the Fed. I think having a Fed is probably important in today's monetary system. I mean, I don't know if you happen to know who Robert Mundo is. He was the winner of the 1999 Nobel Prize in Economics. And I mean, and he talked about, I mean, there's, again, tons of theories, but basically he won his Nobel Prize in kind of going over the causes of the Great Depression. And his basic position was that had the price of gold not been raised in the 1920s, and had, like, the major central banks pursued policies of like, more price stability as opposed to adhering to the gold standard, there wouldn't have been a Great Depression. And then he then continues on, no, probably Nazi Revolution and no World War II. He won a Pulitzer Prize for that. Again, I don't know how much stock you put in that, considering that maybe the New World Order, you know, dominates that as well. But I just look at it on its face, of all the people all over, whether we're talking about the financial institutions like the Goldman Sachs and the J.P. Morgans and the Citibanks and the Societe Generale and the Barclays and the Credit Suisse and all these banks run by thousands upon thousands of brokers and financial analysts and the derivative markets and everything else. It's like in AIG, it's just like, how could all these people that have gone on the record and stated quite clearly that they were basically controlled by greed. They looked at another financial institution at their books and said, wow, they're leveraging 30 to 1. And they're making, you know, tens of billions of dollars a year in what they're doing. We should package these things up and sell them the same way and over-leverage ourselves, and we'll make billions of dollars too. And I, as a financial analyst or broker or commodities exchange manager, whatever it is that I'm doing, I know that I'm paid solely on the basis of what I do in this one fiscal year. So my salary is $200,000, but my bonus could be anywhere from, say, $500,000 to $2 million. And it's solely dependent upon my bottom line at the end of the year. With no regard to what damage, quote unquote, might possibly happen 5 years down the road, or next year, or 2 years. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's just been so many exposés by so many different, media institutions, whether mainstream or otherwise, that have really kind of, delved into these reasons. And it seems to me that the primary motivator here is greed. And, I don't know, so I just, as far as any design is concerned, I just think that that's just highly unlikely.
Okay, Rich, I don't mean to cut you off, bro, but we have a bunch of calls coming in. I keep having to hang up on them.
Sure.
You're welcome to call back towards the end of the show, and we can continue this conversation into the night like we did last time. That would be fun.
Oh, no problem.
Okay, bro, thank you very much. Take care.
Take care.
Okay, Chris, go ahead, and after that, we have another caller coming in.
Okay, well, yeah, I definitely think there's some great points. I definitely heard, you know, Glenn Beck have that same kind of attitude that, you know, is just motivated by greed. I'm not denying that it is. I'm sure that, that's the primary motivation for a lot of people in this. I would say this, even if that was adhered to, that it was just greed, I would say that it is at the very least being capitalized on very well by those that do have an agenda that is not necessarily based on greed, but rather power, or possibly something even beyond that. I would say, regardless of whether what's actually, you know, the mechanics behind it, I think it is being capitalized on, and I think we probably agree on that one.
Right.
Disagree.
Indeed. Okay. We lost the caller, actually. caller, I'm sorry about that. Feel free to call back in, and we'll go ahead and take that. Let's see here.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely think it's important, though. I mean, what do you think about it?
Well, in that whole situation, you know, I think that a lot of times when you're thinking in terms of conspiratorial thought, people take things to the extreme. When you get behind motivations, you know, do I believe that, you know, there's a group of people out there? Well, I worked in real estate. Let me just start with this. I worked in real estate. And, you know, the guys, for the most part, the guys that I worked with were decent guys, I think. Oh my God. So the guy called in again, and I totally missed it. I'm doing really good tonight. Let me call him back and get him on the air. Let me see here.
Oh, yeah, that was a good call. My roommate would sure like to talk to him. He's really into that. All that that argument is his forte.
Right, you know, and when you get into conspiracy, they take it too far. Like, I worked in real estate, and the guys that I worked with were pretty decent guys, but I can tell you right now, if it was outside the box, they did not give a shit about it. Why? Because it did not affect their bottom line. That's all they cared about. I got into a debate with the person that I worked with in regards to what inflation actually was. And I remember bringing it up and saying, you know, I've been studying inflation in the Federal Reserve. It's been very interesting. And I was kind of sharing with him some of the things that I was learning. And he rolled his eyes at me, shook his head, and then started to go into this long explanation about the theoretical basket of goods and how inflation works. You know, and then I told him, I said, no, it has to do with the amount of money in the system. That's the primary cause of inflation. Those, what you're talking about is the difference between actual value and relative value. And I was trying to explain to him, and he wouldn't hear me because he was a USC graduate, and he had lots of money, and I didn't. And so there was no way I was going to teach him. So we got back to the office. I got online to three different dictionary websites, printed out the definition of inflation, highlighted the part that said it's primarily caused by the amount of money in the system, and handed it to him. And he had his words. And then after that, even, I brought up some other things that I know was absolutely true. And would he take my word for it? No. And he even had the nerve on one of them to say, okay, you were right about the inflation thing, but, you know, you're still wrong about this. And I just, you know, how do you get through to people like that? This guy's a millionaire, okay? You know, I guess the reality is that, yes, there are people who are greedy involved in these corporations. Yes, they're motivated by greed, but they're not the ones that are agenda setters, and nor do they care. The only thing they care about is their bottom line, and they'll believe and do whatever has to be done in order to achieve their wealth. Period. So that does not mean that there's not people above them or related to them or in very influential positions of power who are not, you know, pulling strings and trying to make things happen. I mean, you know, and I think
many,
that for the most
motivators,
part,
really. I mean, there's some people total that are doing the agenda that have no idea that they're doing the agenda, that are totally motivated by sex or something like that, you know. And it's like, let's say, you know, somebody can be manipulated through that if they have a particular. That's why I think so many are pedophiles, is because they're so easily manipulated if they are, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Caller, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes.
Hey, yeah, it's Wayne from Canada calling. Just really enjoyed the show, and it's unfortunate that Tessarian didn't come on. I just wanted to ask if you guys have read any of the books by Jonathan Gray.
Jonathan Gray. Can you refresh my memory? Is that a PhD?
Yeah, he's an archaeologist, actually.
I think I have read one of his books.
Yeah, he's got one book I highly recommend. It's called Stolen Identity, subtitled Jesus Christ History or Hoax. He's got a new one out called Who's Playing Jesus Games, which is kind of a more of a condensed version of that book, and another one called Sting of the Scorpion. And basically, he goes through a lot of the, you know, historical analysis of proving that Jesus did exist and debunking a lot of these debunkers that are out there.
Oh, okay.
So I just want to put that out there for you guys.
Yeah, thanks. I'll definitely check that out. I'm not sure if I actually read that. I think I did, but I'll check it out.
All right.
Cool. How do you spell Gray?
It's G-R-A-Y. First thing is J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N. And then it's Gray, G-R-A-Y. And his website is beforeus.com.
All right, cool. Thanks for the info on that.
All right, well, you guys keep up the good job, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Okay, we have another caller on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question for Chris. Hey, Chris, it's Matt Kazee.
Hey, Matt, what's up?
How are you doing, man?
Doing good.
I got a question. You know, I was listening a little bit earlier. I caught the show late, so I didn't get to hear the whole interview. But now, do you think that, my question is, do you think that Jordan Maxwell and Michael Tessarian and Alan Watt and Alex Jones are either working for the New World Order or they're useful patsies?
Well, I wouldn't throw Alex Jones in there. But not because.
Well, okay, but then that's why I wanted to call, was because what about, you know, him having Jordan on multiple times, and they're working on a project together. I mean, don't you think that his entire crew, and he's known this guy for a long time, that Alex, above all people, will be able to tell if Jordan Maxwell was working for the New World Order?
Well,
and I think that's proof that he's not.
I don't think it's proof that he's not. I think that just from what I've seen, you know, of Alex and talking about that stuff, I think Alex is very possibly a little naive on the thing. I think when he went crazy about Zeitgeist and he understood the connection of this theosophical society and that right after he interviewed Peter Joseph, I honestly believe that after reading that article, that was some of the first time he'd heard of any of that stuff. And I think that generally speaking, I'm giving all those guys the benefit of the doubt. Do I think that any of them are working for the New World Order? No, I don't even really know how that would go about, you know, happening. I think that the New World Order operates under ideas like we were talking about in economics. I think that they work by, you know, educating the economic teachers to have these knee-jerk reactions that defend socialism. Does that mean that person is working for the New World Order? Or does that mean that they've been, system was...
Well, you know what I'm saying. I mean, are we splitting hairs here? You know what I'm saying. I mean, really, for me, I heard you talking about patsies earlier, that they're patsies in all of this, that they're getting fed information.
No, we are patsies. This whole system is a patsy. The New World Order system is a patsy system for one that will look like a utopia afterwards. That's what I meant by patsy. Do I think that, in regards to Jordan Maxwell being on Alex Jones' show and stuff like that, I don't,
I don't. And you really? I mean, you really think that Alex hasn't done his homework on Jordan Maxwell? That dude, Jordan's been around for years. Alex has done his homework, and he, you know, he has him back on the show. I mean, for me, I just think that's interesting because I know you're a big fan of Alex, and I think that Alex's opinion on Jordan is pretty clear throughout the radio broadcasts that they've done.
Well, I don't think so. I think that if they actually got into some of the specifics about what Jordan Maxwell believes, I think that we would see some fireworks going. I think that for the most part, at least the first time that he was on the show, it was definitely seemed sort of like a charity kind of situation. You know, that's the tone that he was giving Jordan Maxwell. He's been in the movement for so long. And it wasn't that long after that that he was ranting and raving about having figured out this whole connection to, you know, the whole externalization of the hierarchy, the Islamic connection, and stuff like that. I think that, honestly, if anybody in the world is going to be...
Okay, but wait.
It's going to be Alex Jones. Jones gets everybody in the world saying Alex Jones is a CIA, whatever. If Alex sees that in other people, he's just going to think it's more of the same. I don't expect anybody to think especially in his case, if he sees, like, my video, William Cooper debunks Jordan Maxwell, he's going to see that, like, yeah, they tried that with me, too.
Chris, man, there's not much that doesn't pass that desk. He's seen all that stuff. Seriously, even if you were correct and for some reason Alex just drew a blank on all that stuff or whatever, he still had him back on the show, and then they started talking about wanting to work together on a project, and you know, it's, for me, it's the same thing as the people who accuse Alex Jones of that, or accuse that, oh, he's a Jesuit, he's controlled by the, you know, that's nonsense, or he's CIA or whatever. I feel the same. I get flack for that, and I get flack for taking up for Maxwell. So for me, it's just one of the things that I don't really get it.
Hold on.
It's very divisive.
Well, before you guys comment, I'm going to go to a break real quick. Can you guys hold on, and we'll continue this conversation after the break?
Sure.
Okay. How about you? Cool with that, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Just one second. We'll be right back. Or I was seriously going to wet myself right here on the radio. And I did not want to miss this. So go ahead and continue where you left off. Sorry about that.
I mean, that was basically my question. And Chris, I know you to be a good guy, and so... I'm a little bit concerned, though, that all of this stuff can, for some people, not all people, because if people listen to you closely, they understand your message, but for some people, it's more fuel on the fire as, like, divide and conquer, and it just breaks up people into little subgroups.
I see the concern, but here's the thing, though. If I'm right, then it is absolutely imperative that not only me, but more like me, get out here and quit. Because if the agenda really isn't, if the agenda is actually something spiritual, and listen, Alex Jones's show does a lot of things, but it doesn't. He doesn't even touch that. It's not really. I mean, I'm sure he knows he's a smart guy, but he's not spending a lot of his time like researching and looking into those kind of things. He wouldn't know. He wouldn't recognize it immediately when he saw it. He never seems to address even like what Bill Cooper's whole main thesis was. He addresses the police state and the boot in your face stuff, but not any of like Cooper's entire main point. If I'm right, then it's not immediately obvious, but extremely important. If indeed, let's say in 2012, you know, something crazy happens and people, you know, aliens come out and show us about how wrong the whole world is, and then they essentially concur with a religion that has been prepared for us, and we agree, me, you, all the truthers, enter in what we think will be a utopia, then at that point, if we don't recognize that beforehand, we are all unbelievably screwed, and we're going to fall into it, not because we were busy, worried about Berkey water filters and how we're going to survive, but rather, what potential types of deception should we be looking out for? And it's all not based on railing against religious views, but rather, what can you prove that they're not telling the truth about? And that is red flags. Let's investigate.
Well, I hear that, and you know, neither one of us can determine what's going to happen. I don't think anything's going to happen in 2012, but my whole concern is just that sometimes the attacks. And I've heard people call into the Alex Jones show recently and trying to hold him accountable for having Jordan Maxwell on, and he's the waters of life, it's Jordanus Maximus, and he's seen all that stuff, and I just don't think Alex buys it. And that was my whole point, man. You know, you keep on doing what you gotta do.
What did Alex say when he said,
I mean, I don't, you'll have to find the archive of it, but it's out there. I heard he basically, didn't buy it and put, you know, basically said that, the kid didn't have anything on that. That all of that is just, you know, merely, him saying because he found it on Jordan Maxwell's page that it means that he's Madame Blavatsky's devil child. I mean, that's just, for me, that's ridiculous.
Well, it's not, but if he lied about it, if he said, I mean, then it's something, I never once said, that's it, that's the thing. But I mean, the whole story in that regard was that he said that he, you know, didn't know about the term until, you know, very recently we got an email from a rabbi, which may or may not be true, but it's highly suspicious considering, you know, stated, you know.
My whole thing is, so what? So what either way does it, for me, it doesn't factor into things as greatly as you. One last question, though.
Read my
I definitely have read parts of excerpts of all that stuff, and, you know, I don't agree with theosophy. You know that, Chris. But anyways, one last question, and this is a rhetorical question because I know you to be a good guy, but how do people out there know that you aren't part of some covert operation to discredit these people and get us fighting amongst ourselves? And that's it. Well, and anyway, you guys keep it up. I'll listen off the air.
All right, bro.
Sure. Thanks, man. Well, the only way that I know of anything to judge anybody is know them by their fruits. I mean, if you look at Michael Tesorian's board of his followers and devotees, they're not doing too good. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that you know by who's listening to you or whatever, because I don't, that's not what I mean, I guess. I guess what I mean is it creates anger, and that there, if you believe Jordan Maxwell, then you believe that Jewish people are the worst people around. Yeah. I mean, you believe that they are all fakes and they are controlling the world and they're trying to kill your babies. And you hate them and you have this hate inside of you because of them. Michael Tesorian can barely keep his, you know, fangs in his mouth when he starts talking about Christians and Jewish people. There's so much hate that comes out of them when they begin to speak of that. I don't have hate for any of those guys. I am worried desperately for the last people in this world that are caring about the world, that are caring about why things are happening and things like that. Us truthers is who I am here for. I want us to, and I don't, and if anybody thinks I'm doing this because I, you know, want to get listeners or whatever, I don't have anything to sell. I don't want attention for this. I don't like the attention that I get for doing this. There's nothing beneficial for me in this at all. I just happen to see something, and I also see that nobody else is talking about it, and I am desperately trying to get people to look into what I'm saying.
Right. Right. Okay. So, man, this has been interesting. I guess I understand where he's coming from in the sense that, you know, there's so many different people saying different things. You know, and everyone is accusing one another of either being an infiltrator or trying to spread disinfo, and you know what I'm saying? And it's like, I in a general sense, I understand where he's coming from. I can't say that I'm not without my own bias, because I really believe that most of what you're saying is true.
I agree with you too, like Alan Watts saying that Red Ice, you know, did him wrong and all that stuff, and Michael Tesorian saying Alan Watts, whatever, and that whole thing, and David Icke, and Jordan Maxwell, and, you know, name it, your internal fighting. But I would say, let's name them. Jordan Maxwell, and Michael Tesorian, David Icke, Alan Watt, you know, there's a few here interspersed, but we've basically got these guys here in our truth movement. These marquee dudes.
Right.
And so, who cares if they're all, I mean, the reason that they are all fighting amongst each other is because they all got super big holes, and what's the unifying factor about each one of those guys is they have a different version about why not to pay attention to Jesus. Like David Icke, you know, he says one thing, Michael Tesorian contradicts him in that regard, Jordan Maxwell sees it a little bit differently, Alan Watt sees it completely differently. They all agree on just the basic promises, but they all have the different things on that. I mean, all I'm saying is that I don't want to say it's just that, but it's suspicious to me that we have these five dudes And so what if they are all fighting amongst each other? Mm-hmm. It, to me, it's the rare thing to have anybody saying, one of those dudes is wrong. Mm-hmm. That's what we need. And somebody pointed a finger at those dudes is so rare because everybody's been so totally messed up by, you know, having their mind wiped clean and reprogrammed because mm-hmm. of, like, waking up to the truth. And if you wake up to the New World Order and the rest of it, you're automatically blindsided and taught a new way to think. And so these guys have been programming us for the last 5, 6, 7, 10 years, whatever it is. And so nobody is daring to point a finger at them because they're saying, but they're telling us about the New World Order. They can't be. How could they be one of them? Because they're telling us about the New World Order. Does it really matter about if I'm telling you one of those guys is lying, does it really make anything different about what you know about the world? Does it change the fact that we are in desperate times and need solutions to these problems? These guys don't offer us those solutions. Mm-hmm. They offer, please buy my book, please buy my $900 DVD set. They don't offer that. They're not in the business of that. They may say they are. They all mm-hmm. say they are. Mm-hmm. But what are they really doing in that regard?
Right. Very interesting. I'm trying to be a good moderator here, but I got to say, for the most part, I'm not entirely thrilled about any of these gentlemen that we were talking about. So, nothing personal. I'm going to treat them just as fairly as anybody else. I just happen to come from the William Cooper. You consistently bring up William Cooper. I'm kind of on the same camp as that, and I don't think there's been a William Cooper since William Cooper. So, you know, there's the whole, you know, the mystery schools are not good, and then there's the whole, the mystery schools are good, but they have bad people, and they're using the power for bad reasons. I'm more of it, I think they're not good. I think that most of what these guys teach is totally exoteric interpretations of Freemasonry, and silly for the most part. So I can't say that I am unbiased in any sense, but if they do decide to come on here, I am not going to, you know, I'm going to do my best just to keep my mouth shut and let it happen between you guys because, you know, I definitely would love to debate any one of these guys myself. But
Bill Cooper's interesting. I mean, it's not that he just was saying that the mystery schools were bad. It was that he was telling us what they were going to do and what they believed and what they were starting to push on us.
Yeah, that's
true. And lo and behold, after he died, we all, those that were there, we all started doing it.
Right.
You know as well as I do that there could be no Jordan Maxwell, Michael Tesarian, Alan Watt, David Icke, if Bill Cooper was still here. That is a big, fat, you know, they could be there, but they would be every day pointed out to be the frauds that they are. He was calling out Zacharias Hitchin before there was a Michael Heiser. You know, he wasn't perfect. He had things that he didn't have completely figured out yet, and probably a lot because there wasn't the internet as we know it now at that point. He was getting most of it from books, but so he had some things wrong. But for the most part, that guy was dead on, as far as I see it.
Yeah, I gotta give him that. I think he was probably the most substantial. And I really wonder if he was still around, what it would have turned into, because there's some people who, you know, even though I saw your video on how you know the William Cooper debunks Jordan Maxwell video. You know, I definitely wonder, because sometimes I feel like he had thoughts going in, and even though for the most part his audience was Christian, and he seemed to always teach in a Christian way, kind of unconventional Christian way, what some would consider no bullshit way. And, you know, but at the same time, like, you know, the people that were the closest to him seemed to be going down the Jordan Maxwell path. I think they even had astrologer come to their meeting and things like that. And it makes me wonder. I don't know really what to think. Sometimes I would like to believe that he was kind of on that Christian tip, because that's what it seemed like. That was what he was coming with. But on another tip, I think that sometimes, like, he wasn't quite sure himself. You know?
I heard him one time kind of sum it up. One time, during the Mystery Babylon series is pretty early on, 1993 and things like that. He pretty much called it all out. He recognized, he was debunking Zeitgeist back then when he was talking about, you know, Plutarch and all these people that were interpreting the Osirian cycle have recourse to Plutarch and the parallel lives and all that stuff. And basically, he was an initiated in the mystery schools well after Jesus was born, about 200 years after, where Plutarch was essentially set the bar for the mystery religion incorporating the religion they couldn't control, Christianity, into the mystery religion, which became the Catholic Church and Gnostic, different variations of the Gnostic stuff.
Right.
So anyway, basically he recognized that, he understood what they were doing, but yet there were still some things, like, he was at one point reading something about Quetzalcoatl, and nowadays he could have easily Googled that and found it to be, well after the time of Jesus, and obviously influenced by, you know, Spain and things like that, who were, you know, Gnostic, or not Gnostic, they're Catholics, things like that, you know, and so he would have known to know it wasn't valid now, because of that information, but I mean, not just that information. I can't remember exactly what it was, but even then, at that point, he said, you know, I don't know if this is real or not.
Right.
I don't know if this actually happened. You know, this Quetzalcoatl did all these things just like Jesus, but I don't care. You know, I don't care. I he basically affirmed his belief in Christianity regardless of what it was. And I thought that took some serious balls, because here was presented with something who he didn't have any recognition of the idea that it was true, but he knew about all the other stuff with parallel lives and all the stuff with, you know, the mystery religion incorporating Christianity. And so even though at that time he believed it to be true, he said, so what? So what? I still, it's not going to change my beliefs. But he was confused. You can tell those moments in his thing, and you can tell he wasn't, he was genuinely confused a lot of times, and I'm not sure exactly if he was a great man or whatever. I don't claim he was, but in that regard, he seemed to have it pretty well figured out.
Yeah. In my study in Freemasonry, I gotta admit, I've come across some times where I was just like, I mean, I was feeling like I needed to jump that, you know, jump the curb and become part of the whole mystery religion thing, because I felt like it was truth. But after, you know,
Today, there were some things that Tessarian says that if I hadn't have Googled it, I didn't almost want to Google it. I was like, oh my gosh, is that true? And then, I almost passed it up. I was just like, I was stuck in the gut. It's like, that can't be true. It's like, is that real? And then truly Google it and find out it wasn't. And it was something I would have never thought to look up. And it has that, like, lure into it. It's like, believe me rather than the truth. It was like,
Because it seems so logical. It seems so logical. When you start connecting all the words, like Horus, risen, and horizon, and the sun, you know, the sun. It just makes sense, and you finally get from a place where you don't have to put your faith in anything other than your logic. I mean, it gets you to that place where you can go, hey, this makes sense. There's a logical explanation for all of this stuff. And now I don't have to feel like an idiot that's just clinging to hope. You know?
Exactly.
And
when I was reading Blavatsky today, I was stunned with the power of that writing. I was like, it was so well done. It was still stuff you could actually go disprove, but there was no indication that you should. It was so well done. Like, oh, that makes perfect sense. And the reason, I think, is that, like her writings and Alice Bailey's writings, by their own admission, were by what they called ascended masters, who I am suggesting to you, believe it or not, that they are thousands of year old and very, very smart. If they are automatically writing things, you know, I do believe that people do that, and you know, that's what, you know, a lot of stuff the Tessarian's grandfather taught, a course on the Course in Miracles, and that book was written, you know, ostensibly by automatic writing and things like that. When, as the Bible calls it, doctrines of demons, when that is happening, they're very smart, they know how to manipulate humanity, and that's exactly what we have. That's what we're all believing right now, is essentially, as the Bible says, in the last days, that people will depart from the faith, believing doctrines of demons. And
right.
That's exactly what we are in the process of doing.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I can't say it. I understand what the Bible's saying. I don't know if I agree with you that that's what's going on. I don't believe that they're actually channeling anything. I think most of them are hokey and full of crap. I don't think Blavatsky was as intelligent as you do. I really don't. I think that she was nuts, and I think most of her stuff was total gibberish.
She probably was too, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, I guess it all rests on the channeling bit.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't think that, when I read her book, I went through and did research, and was, I mean, all she did was take the most obscure religion she could find and tried to draw comparisons between them, and even fabricated most of her comparisons. You know, and she based it all upon this communication with some higher beings when she went to, you know, India or whatever. You know, I'm like, okay, well, how am I ever supposed to verify that? I can't, you know what I'm saying? I mean, am I going to go to India and find the very person she talked to? No, obviously not. And, you know, it's most of the stuff she said was not stuff you could never prove wrong or prove for that matter. And the fact that she never proved it to me just means it's crap, total bullshit. And, you know, so when I read her stuff, I just feel like what she did was she read a bunch of Freemason books And Freemasonry teaches one thing, and she did not get it, and that's, you know, ironic, because that's what Freemasonry teaches, is that if you're not intelligent enough, you won't get it. And, you know, she did the best she could to interpret what she was reading with her own version, her own spin. And I've gone, you know, I don't know what kind of Christian you are. I've been in Christian churches before where people are speaking in tongues and jumping around, screaming they see a fog and prophesying. And, you know, I've had people prophesy over me when I was in church, and they were totally off the wagon. Like, and, but they were so sure of themselves. And, you know, I've seen cocky so-called prophets and prophetesses strutting around in church. And, you know what I'm saying? To me, it's all the same stuff. You, people are just manifesting, you know, their own, whatever they're thinking in their own mind, and trying to make it seem like it's coming from some divine source. And it doesn't matter what religion, you know, it's part of. I have never believed in most of that stuff. It's always been kind of hokey to me. But,
sure. It is hokey. I mean, in a lot of things, you know, especially when people fake it, when they're in the kind of environment where it's expected, there's a lot of false, bad doctrine of people saying that in order to be saved, you have to speak in tongues. And if you're in a church that believes that, you know, you're going to have a lot of people faking it.
Right,
and that
right.
causes people to say, this is all stupid, you know.
Right.
It's such a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, if you can get bad doctrine like that into something like that. Does
yeah.
that mean that it's not true and that people don't actually do it? I mean, I don't know. The guy in the music store, right next to me, I mean, I said, he had cancer. I said, I'd pray for him. He's like, what? I was like, yeah, I'll pray for you. So I left and I came back and I would have never asked him again. Because if I saw him, you know, he was all happy. I was like, so how's the cancer? He's like, you're the guy that said you'd pray for me. I was like, yes. Yeah. So as he said that, I thought about it and I went to this church and they were all, you know, one of those kind of like, you know, raising their hands up in the air kind of church. They prayed over me. I felt this warm thing in the back of my neck. I went to the doctor, gave me x-rays, and it's completely gone. And so, does that mean that his mind just healed it? Maybe it's some kind of psychological variation of it or whatever, but I'm just saying that it does happen. People do get the
right.
power of God is there, but not a lot of people believe that the power of God actually exists, I don't think.
Right. Do you believe that Christians heal, like, or that God heals people through Christian teaching? Do you believe in healings?
Yes.
You do. And do you speak in tongues?
No.
No, okay.
I'm not saying that people don't. I just don't have what, you know, the gift of speaking in tongues. I don't think it's all that important. It's if you do have it, it needs to be interpreted, which is the way it says in the Bible, not this kind of craziness. As it says, God is not the author of confusion. People in Corinth were doing the same thing.
Right.
And, anyways, long story, but no, I don't, I think it's valid. I don't have it, but yes.
Okay. Interesting. Just curious kind of where you're coming from, you know, and, yeah, I gotta say, you know, this is, I'm hoping that Tsarion actually takes the debate. If he doesn't, you know, oh well, I'll just add him to the coward list. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if you're gonna go around saying the things that you say, you're gonna get a backlash, and you should be ready and willing to face up to the people you're accusing of being in darkness. You know, the dude is saying that Christians are wrong. Christians are this, Christians are that, and he does say that. I've listened to him say it himself. And, you know, the reality is he needs to stand up for that belief, if that's really what he believes in, face a Christian who knows about this stuff, and a Christian who now is like, you know, like yourself, who is actually saying that most of what he's teaching is wrong. So I think it's a good matchup. So I really hope that he takes it, bro. I think we're going to go ahead and call it quits, though, for tonight. Going to invite you back on in the future. I'm not sure what kind of debate I'm going to hook you up with. It's going to either be religion-based or, you know, kind of one of the people that you've been exposing, hopefully. You know, obviously, I'm trying to get to Tsarion. I don't think there's a chance in hell for Maxwell, but, you know, if Tsarion hears this, Michael Tsarion, if you hear this, come on the show, man. I mean, come on. Don't cower out. I'm not.
You know,
we're not going to attack you.
I tried
you.
To call in when he was on Alex Jones, and I was. I think I was the next in line because when they ended the show, they said, "Okay, sorry to Chris and Chris." I don't know if I was which Chris I was, but I almost got on an Alex Jones show when Tsarion was on.
Oh, that would have been cool. You know, like I understand. You know, I think that there's a place for debating and for challenging what people say. That's just the nature of the world. This isn't. And I mean, no matter how you spin it. The bottom line is that the whole world right now is in a massive debate, whether it's directed toward each other or not, over what is truth and what is not. And, you know, if Michael Tsarion has a truth and his truth is, you know, has to do with debunking other people's truths, then I think he needs to be confronted about that. And he needs to be able to stand his ground. And if he has the knowledge and he knows what he's talking about, in a debate, he'll stand his ground. And he'll come out of the debate victorious, having convinced people that he's right and the other person is wrong. I look at people who decide not to debate as cowards. People who know that by getting into a debate, they're going to be shown to be liars. And that's why they don't get into them. that's the only way I can spin it. Because there's nothing to lose from being in a debate if you really know your ground. If you know your stuff, at the very least, what's going to happen at the end of it all is that people are going to either say, okay, they had some good points here, they had some good points there, but I believe this, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Most people will stand their ground and believe whatever they want to believe. And, you know, usually they believe the same thing. But when another person gets slaughtered, you know, and I think that the people who know that feel like they're going to get slaughtered are the ones who refuse to take debates. I mean, that's just my opinion. I would like to know any other reason why he... If Michael Sarian, if you're not going to take this debate, I would like to know why. I'm just curious, you know? But... Let that be said, the debate, you know, it's been thrown down. And Chris White's really ready to accept it. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And we'll keep it cordial and peaceful. It's not a debate, but it's, you know, more of a conversation to try to get to the bottom of some pretty complicated issues that are, I feel, are splintering the movement and the people who are a part of this whole thing. And I think we need to get to the bottom of it. I really think the only way to do that is through conversating with people who are in conflict with one another, and I think you're a representative of a certain group of people, Christian primarily, who believe that the things that Michael Tsarian are teaching are the New World Order, and I would love him to come on the show, and you know, people like Super Dave who believe that what he's teaching is truth, and you know, and have them come on and represent themselves in a conversation to get to the bottom of things. So,
to Dave's credit, he said that he believed his own truth, and not that all of it was not necessarily true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I hear that, but that's what my mom used to say. You know, I used to have, that's my kind of family I grew up in, where everybody had their own truth, but nobody ever would say what it is because they didn't want to be challenged. They just wanted to believe what they wanted to believe. And, you know, when people say that, I feel like they believe something and they disagree with you. And in their own mind, they're probably going, you're full of shit, but they won't say it to you because they're not that kind of person. And I respect that. There's some people who just don't like debates. They just don't think that it's the right way of dealing with things. They'd rather just be left alone. And, you know, I grew up in a family like that.
He kind of summed it up and said that people that debunk traditional values often have values of their own in the background that they believe to be immune from the debunking process.
Exactly. Indeed. And, you know, I respect everybody and their position on things. But I think, and I think most people will agree, that it's about time we have some damn debates around here. Regarding the topic. So, with that, thank you, Chris, for coming on.
Thank you, girl.
Yeah, and have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.